so I have no personal financial relationships to disclose. I'm very pleased to be here today to talk in this symposium about things going on the ground, and that would be campaigns and model programs having to do with elder mistreatment. My plan for my time, and I want to save time to talk, as a matter of fact, and so I want to honor the time that I need to have here, and that is, I want to give you, what I will do is give you a brief history, a little bit about the elder abuse movement, and then talk about initiatives that are happening. And these will be campaigns and model programs, or what we believe are model programs. And so I will talk about a global initiative, some federal initiatives, some state initiatives, faith-based, organizational, local, and then conclusions in the future about what needs to happen in this particular piece. So just a little bit of information, because I know not all of you probably know this topic as well as others, so I'll go quickly of that. But one in 10 older adults has experienced some form of abuse, neglect, or financial exploitation. We still do not know all those numbers. One in 4 adults with dementia experience some form of abuse, as Linda was talking about. One study found that elders who experience even modest abuse have a 300% higher risk of death when compared to those who are unabused. These are facts about a population of individuals who are aging as we see, and for whom public health does not have on its radar, which is part of why we're here, but now will. Is beginning to, and we are pleased that even a symposium like this is held. Years ago, we couldn't even get one. In fact, Ron and I were one of the early presentations that was ever done at this conference on elder abuse. So the fact that we're here at all, even the last one of the day, is pretty huge for us. So we want to talk just a little bit about this movement. So has elder abuse just begun and I just heard about it? Actually, no. Elder abuse has gone on across time. Notable examples might be, depending on how you begin to think about these things, population control among some populations. So when older adults could no longer be sustaining in the communities, they were sent away, or they were sent out on ice floes. Maybe one of you is thinking about that sometime. But these particular ways to control populations at particular times. I have used in other writing, and I have used in other arguments, that perhaps the very Salem witch trials that we have all probably read about, if you read a particular play by Arthur Miller, who's called The Crucible, you may know that from high school. You were tortured with it. I might have tortured you with it were I teaching you in high school. Arthur Miller's play began to sort of talk about why individuals in the witch trials were accused of that, and probably the most notable piece in his liner notes, as well as other historical books that you may have read on the topic, would say it was a lot about older people and their property. If that is the case, that was clearly elder abuse. I can't imagine anything worse than being burned at the stake, as a matter of fact. So these pieces of mistreatment are not necessarily a new topic that has really come about in the early 60s or 70s. This treatment of older adults or differentness of older people is in the literature, is in our society, a piece of ageism, but it's certainly part of our history. There have been research and demonstration projects that started to try to address the problem of elder abuse through the Social Security block grant mechanism as early as the 70s, and the results were checkered. Still have not been refuted. And so we have moved along, I would say sometimes loped along on this topic in a sort of a fashion since the 70s at least and early 60s, as we begin to see legislation coming forward, as we begin to see states beginning to take up the banner of this topic in addition to child mistreatment, began to be elder mistreatment as an adjunct. Of course, it took second place because the focus was not on that. And so if states have had a difficult time or our government has a difficult time acknowledging this problem, it is because it often has been added as an add-on to something else. It is not studied on its own in a way it sort of should. And my colleagues can talk about that more at length. Anyway, that particular history It has been added into components of things. Notably, the Older Americans Act began to have components added in about elder abuse, particularly in Title VII, where we begin to see the long-term care ombudsman program being beefed up, and some initiatives and small funding went in the Older Americans Act towards elder mistreatment in an educational function. That began to be what we began to see. In the early 90s, the National Center for Elder Abuse received funding. That would be probably 1992. Funding was received for that particular initiative, and then the National Center on Elder Abuse was born. It took, however, until 2010 for there ever to be an act that contained elder abuse, the Elder Justice Act. Some of you in the room have friends who worked on that particular component, and that took years and years and iterations and negotiation, and in fact became part of the Affordable Care Act. It still does not have funding underneath it, and you can imagine when all the eruptions occurred about with the Supreme Court about the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act, so the Elder Justice Act could have well tanked. And so that particular act is an important one. That date is a historic one for us of 2010. And despite the fact that no funding has yet come underneath it, there have become initiatives under that particular piece. The Department of Justice has consistently funded some elder abuse projects. And I have colleagues up here colleagues and myself have been funded under that, as well as other agencies. So elder abuse work, elder abuse has been going on since time, because unfortunately we have abused each other since time began, elders being a piece of that. But major initiatives have come somewhat late to the field, and still the funding is not commensurate at all with the problem, which is a growing one for any number of particular reasons, for one being the older population itself. And so that, I thought I would just let you know those particular pieces about that particular legislation. The Elder Justice Act has a bunch of huge and important initiatives to try to ramp up APS, to try to give federal visibility to a problem which has been fairly local and state specific, to help with prosecutions and forensic centers, to help increase and help folks with long-term care. These have been some of the pieces to have a nurse aid registry. These have been some of the components of that particular act. We continue. So that brief history we have. World Elder Abuse Awareness Day. So my initial and my international piece that I would want to talk about is what we call WEAD. It is the brainchild of a Canadian person that we know, Elizabeth Podnix and Love. And it has spread across the world. I want to tell you, and you guys probably don't know any of this, but I want to tell you, in the beginning, everybody thought that Dr. Podnix was pretty well nuts, and that her trying to make this initiative a worldwide and international event was probably just some craziness and would go away. And you know what? Bless everyone, it didn't. World Elder Abuse Awareness Day just celebrated its 10th anniversary with a big hoop-de-doo in Washington in June. It is June 15th, and it really is an international event now. Many states, many localities, places across the country all join together during that particular day. And it is also a time when new initiatives get discussed and talked about. So in an international way, this vehicle is critical and important because it takes it to the level of the United Nations. And it again did that this particular year. So there is another opportunity for you to think about elder mistreatment. It is a huge call to action, and it is a global phenomenon now. National initiatives that have to do with elder mistreatment are a number. I don't know if I'm going to take the time to go to these websites. I think I won't, but I think I will tell you about them nonetheless. So the National Center on Elder Abuse came to AOA, as I said, in 1992 as a permanent home, and that center promulgates information about elder mistreatment, also serves as a hotline, and was the repository for the research on elder abuse through a thing that I'll talk about in a moment. The way the funding got passed around for the National Center on Elder Abuse through the Administration for Community Living, which was the Administration on Aging, was in one way a partner allocated process in its early years. In later years, it became a single source that competed for that particular project, and that was at UC Irvine, now migrated, I think, to the University of Southern California under the directorship of Laura Mosqueda. So that national center has been important in raising the visibility of the issue of elder abuse, and yet still was not a full-time staff person devoted just to that particular project. Also under the umbrella of the Administration for Community Living is the Ombudsman Program, the Long-Term Care Ombudsman. And some of you, in fact, may be Long-Term Care Ombudsman. I do not know that. I was one at another point in my life. And that particular project really is what Linda was talking about. It really dwells with the nursing home, assisted living, institutional, residential part of what we have to do with long-term care. And they are truly advocates, individuals, for persons who are living in facilities. And they shoulder a huge burden, underfunded, and rely as much on funded positions as volunteers. And yet they face huge and difficult issues when they are addressing the work that they are doing. There are allocations for them, but as you know, for the Older Americans Act, for example, that funding was flat for any number of years, and then the other thing that you need to know is it has to be reauthorized. So the Older Americans Act, which funds the Administration on Aging, has to be reauthorized, and that becomes a piece that is not a stream of constant funding. Other national initiatives that I will speak about just a little bit, giving you a tour, is the Center for Disease Control, and we have a colleague here from that national entity who will talk some more about elder mistreatment and the position of public health within position of elder mistreatment with public health. The Department of Justice has also a number of initiatives, particularly the National Institute of Justice. Has done a lot of work around, it's probably found the bulk of research that has been done in the past number of years on elder abuse. The National Institutes of Health has funded some work on elder abuse. I would say a number of us at this table have been funded by them from at one time or another, but that is not a major initiative. It really is sort of grant specific. Only one time was there a call for work done by NIA on this issue of elder mistreatment. Office of Victims of Crime tries to look at issues of elder mistreatment from the vantage of victims, trying to support them. They do fund some projects. I know some have been done in recent years on polyvictimization. I just told Ms. Kincaid about this, one now is being done on exploitation by guardians. And that is coming out of that particular office. So you're beginning to see some national initiatives having to do with that. I thought I would tell you two state initiatives, and for the people who are from the University of Kentucky in the room, I decided I would talk about that. And so I will just say, listed under a nice map for the Administration on Aging on state initiatives are Illinois, who listed the Office of Public Guardian there as one initiative that they have, and Kentucky has the Local Elder Abuse Coordinating Councils as a component of what it does. Local initiatives I chose, and there are any number of them. We don't even know all that there is. But one that would be, that you might be able to look at, and I'm happy to send these slides to you so you can cruise the internet as you wish, would be UC Irvine Center of Excellence on Elder Abuse and Neglect. It's a huge forensic center, initially funded by the Archstone Foundation. It was really, really instrumental in helping with bruising studies, pulling together elder mistreatment across the world, and I know that because it was such a fine and excellent center, multidisciplinary teams, it's really done some of the outstanding work on that, showing us that multidisciplinary teams increase prosecution rates. An important faith-based initiative that has dealt with domestic violence, but also took up the banner of elder abuse, is Safe Havens. And it tries to, recognizing that faith communities can really have a tremendous and important role in addressing, intervening, and preventing elder mistreatment. Other organizations, and there are lots of them, but I think all these people that I list on here would be really angry if I didn't say something about them. The American Association Commission on Law and Aging has been huge in putting forth all kinds of important legal work having to do with long-term care, as well as elder mistreatment and guardianship and end of life. Clearinghouse on Elder Abuse in Later Life is the article research report repository. It's at the University of Delaware. It has been for many years there, and there, if you ever needed to find out anything having to do with elder abuse, you could go to Kane and find that catalog abstracted. They know all the work that has been done. In PIA, the International Network for the Prevention of Elder Abuse, I would, at least my conflict of interest there is I am its secretary. It is the International Network on the Prevention of Elder Abuse and is the only body that is international of that group. The National Adult Protective Services Association probably has the premier conference on elder abuse held every year just recently. We call that NEPSA. The National Committee for the Prevention of Elder Abuse, NICP, is the national group that NPIA is the international group for. And the National Consumer Voice was an old group called NICNR, and it has to do with facilities and abuse in nursing homes and resident rights. What campaigns and model programs have about is seeing a world where there is no elder abuse. And this is what happens on the state, on the national, on international, and local levels to try to stop that. And we will take questions, I suspect, at the end. I'm done.